In this episode, I sit down with a group of single members of the church and talk about how leaders can better support them in their wards.
It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness, the loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.
Hey, welcome back to the Leading LDS Podcast. This is Kurt Frankum, the host, and I welcome you back to another episode. I appreciate everybody that listens in, and I hope you're gathering information that is helping you succeed as a leader. You know, I've noticed that more and more I see emails come in from individuals who are hearing the episodes and hearing reading the articles online and just sharing what they're gaining from it, and that they appreciate it. And all over the world, even from Australia to Spain, and it's fun to see those emails come in to see the vast audience that we are reaching. And this episode is a fun one, where I was a little nervous. You'll hear in the recording I'm a little nervous as I ask these questions because I just don't want to say anything silly. Now, there's a story about how this interview came to pass. It's more of a group interview or a panel discussion. But when I interviewed Brian and Laura Hells a few months back about Joseph Smith's polygamy, which is a fantastic episode, and I encourage you to check it out if you haven't already heard it. But when I was at their home after the interview, I was putting away the recording equipment, and I was just asking them questions and learning more about them. And they had both been married and divorced in the past. And we talked about this dynamic of being single in the LDS church, especially after you've been divorced, and what that can do to an individual and how they perceive church differently. And this was something that as a bishop, I really struggled to understand fully in order to help and support those members fully in my ward. And so I thought, you know, why don't we get a group of singles together that you know, and we'll start talking about this. And there's no experts in the room on what it is being single. You know, they're just sharing their perspective, right? And so we could probably do similar interviews like this and learn more and more stuff. So this isn't necessarily a comprehensive discussion about all things single, all things being single in the church. And so if you do have some feedback and thoughts, or if you are single and you hear this, I would love to get your feedback and add to this discussion so that leaders can be more educated on the best way to approach members of their ward that are single to help them feel more involved, more included, especially in a church where we sing hymns about families can be together forever, right? Important doctrine, but sometimes can sting a little to those individuals in specific scenarios. I also want to mention that Laura Hales is coming out with a very important book. It comes out May 9th, and you can actually pre-order it if you go to areasonforfaith.info. A fantastic book where she compiles variety of writings from scholars in the church, people with unique experiences and perspectives about difficult doctrines to understand, difficult perspectives to understand, and they all write in there a reason for faith, hence the title of the book, as to why they continue to believe even though they face these difficult experiences or doctrines in their life. And so a really important book comes out May 9th. And so I wanted to highlight that as you listen to this interview with Laura Hells. Go out and buy her book. She does some great writing, and I always love to support her books. Her and her husband, Brian, have done a great work with getting information out there to educate individuals and especially educate leaders. So here is my interview with Liz, Brooks, Laura, and Brian.
Last time I was at the Hales home talking about the topic of Joseph Smith's polygamy, we were talking after about how you two met, and it wasn't, I don't know what traditional is anymore in this church, but it wasn't the typical met after Brian's mission, run to the temple, get married, and now have lots of kids. And you were both married previously. Now you're married in this marriage, which is fantastic. And I brought the topic of, you know, sometimes leaders in the church have a tough time approaching this topic of singles in the church. And I know the general authorities, it's a big concern, I'm sure, in a lot of their meetings. You see a lot of resources on LDS.org go up and their wives talk about it. Some of their wives have, like Sister Oaks, for example, was single for years and years. And so she's talked on the subject quite a bit, but I just wanted to get a panel discussion. I have a few thoughts and ideas of maybe where we can go, but first I just sort of want to hear a little bit of each one of your stories and mainly the part of that story being how have leaders of the church helped or not helped you through this journey? And again, it's not our intention to throw any leader under the bus or make you feel like there's been failed leadership. We all know that leaders in the church aren't required to go through years of study in these subjects. And so sometimes they give the best shot they can give. And sometimes it doesn't help. Sometimes it does help. So Liz, let's maybe start with your story. What brings you to the world of singledom? And I know I'm probably saying everything I'm not supposed to say, but nonetheless, you can correct me.
Well, I've been single for 10 years. I have two boys, and I was married in the temple to the Returned Missionary. And after my first son was born, I found out that my husband had a pornography addiction. And we tried to work through it, had another child, and eventually the marriage ended. He had an affair and chose to move on. So I found myself with two young boys, ages 1 and 4, and moved to another state. And my experience with leadership in the church has actually been very good. My bishops have been wonderful. Some of the things that they've done to help me out are when my kids were really young, during the sacrament meeting, my bishop noticed I was kind of struggling because I have these two little kids, and it's, you know, any mother that sits alone knows how hard that can be. So one thing he did was assign us to sit with another family. It was almost like it was a calling to this other family. You sit with Liz and her kids and you help her. And that really made a difference in just being able to sit through a sacrament meeting, which is something a single parent really needs, is to be able to hear the talks and take the sacrament. Another thing that my bishops have done is make sure I had good home teachers. And that was actually my request, is, you know, please give me someone who will come and someone who will teach my kids what a worthy priesthood holder does. And where we didn't have the priesthood in our home, those home teachers have been wonderful examples to my kids. They, most of them came every single month, and I think it's made a huge difference in my kids' lives. Other things that I think are important are also that visiting teachers come and every month. So I guess that would fall under Relief Society presidency, but single parents need a lot of interaction with other people in the church because we don't have another adult in the home. And so if we can get, you know, that attention from other people, it's really good. I think also, as far as callings go, it's good if bishops know kind of the situation of a single person. If they are at home with their children all day in the church, it's kind of nice to have a calling that is with other adults, maybe rather than put them in primary every Sunday. They need that that little bit of time away from their kids, I think, and also the interaction with other adults at church and that spiritual uplift that you don't always get when you're in the primary.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. I have some other questions I want to hit on that came up as you were talking, but let's first get everybody's story real quick. Brian, let's go to you. Let's talk about what your story was before maybe Laura came into your life. Just sum that up for us.
You know, it's probably not that remarkable. My first wife and I, she wanted out of the marriage and she left the marriage. And really, that's all there is to report. So.
Cool. Laura?
Well, I was married at 20 and had 5 children. And at age 38, I found out that I was going to be suddenly single. And so after wearing this mantle of happily married wife, it was very difficult for me to accept that label that was put upon me. But I would say that I did have a lot of support from the bishops initially. In the beginning, especially, I needed help from the Relief Society president and the bishopric, and they helped me make that transition. I was single for about 5 years. Then I remarried, and that marriage lasted a year. And I found myself single again for another 2.5 years. And that's when I married Brian. So I'm actually twice divorced, which is kind of an anomaly in the church and something I didn't really expect myself to be in the position of. But the experience, I think, has been a wonderful growing one and has helped me realize some of the things that we can do in the community of the church to help those who may not mirror the traditional family that's talked about at church all the time.
Yeah, great. Great. Brooks, introduce yourself and tell us a little about your story.
Okay. I'm Brooks, and I didn't get married till I was 36, so about a week before I was 37. And so I have a little bit of a perspective on what it feels like to be single for a long time as well in the church. And then I was married for 8 years and then went through the divorce, and similar to Brian, it was somewhat unremarkable in that she just didn't want to be married anymore. And so I found myself fighting for it and just didn't work out. And so now I've been single again for 2 years. And I have a bishop right now that's been really good in terms of helping me out. And he has, and we can get into some more questions later on that, but I'll just give you a little brief summary of what he's done to help out. And he meets with me about quarterly. And right after the divorce, he just told me, he had me come in and said that he wanted to check up with me every 3 months. And really, it was mainly just to make sure I'm worthy. And to be candid, he felt like after having been married, he knew that there might be some temptations in some areas that you wouldn't be as vulnerable at otherwise. And so he would bring me in and has brought me in every 3 months, mainly just to make sure I'm temple worthy. It hasn't really got into so much like, are you dating now and things like that, just mainly to make sure I'm doing okay and my kids are doing okay. I have had some help from home teachers as well.
A question I want to ask is, there's such this, I think, Laura, you've talked about it too, but, and you mentioned it a little, Liz, that there's such this stigma that comes with eternal marriage in this church. Like, obviously, it's an ordinance. It's something that, you know, prophets and apostles have encouraged us to make as a goal. But, and then when it doesn't work out, I mean, nobody gets married thinking, oh, this probably won't work. Right. And so then suddenly it does. How does that stigma, what do you think about when, in regards to that doctrine or that stigma of having an eternal marriage, what was difficult in that transition from being married? Now you're suddenly not in relation to the church and your ward family. Anything come to mind, Liz?
One of the things that I noticed was some people in the church seem to feel a little uncomfortable around me, especially when I first moved into a ward. They maybe had questions about why I was divorced that were maybe afraid to ask, or, you know, just weren't quite sure what to do with me. But for the most part, people were very accepting and supportive because I was at church. So anyone that's, you know, remaining active in the church, it's pretty clear that they have a testimony and they want to be there. So, I had children, and I think that helped me to be accepted into the wards and feel comfortable because I still belong to, you know, a family, and I was there with my family. But overall, I feel like the stigma didn't bother me very much.
Good. Is that something maybe there isn't, that's not a huge deal for people? What would you say, Laura? Or, yeah, feel free to.
I think it's probably word by word, your experience. I happened to move after my initial divorce to a very conservative community, where not only in the congregation were there not many divorced families, but also in the school district. I remember my second grader coming home from school one day saying, "I found another divorced kid." You know, of course, kids aren't divorced, but they kind of look at that way. And my older children, when the divorce happened, initially felt a difference in the way they were perceived by others, and it affected them. So I really think we need to look at this in a different light, since it's affecting so many more people these days. With so much emphasis on eternal families, we need to be really careful when we're presenting this doctrine, whether it be in a talk or a lesson, to those in the congregation who will never mirror that perception of an eternal family. But that doesn't mean they can't enjoy the full benefit of membership in this church, and they can have the benefits of living a righteous life and all that comes with it. I think I weathered that transition a little bit better than my children because I was a little bit more mature in understanding the doctrine. But my teenagers especially wondered and asked themselves, and I think this is a common question, what about me? Where do I go now in the afterlife? Just who do I belong to? Just because it's something we talk about and speculate about so much in our meetings.
Yeah, you know, that just that doctor, the eternal families, a child in the youth program may hear that. You know, me growing up, I had two parents that were happily married, and I kind of felt like, yeah, I'm sealed to them. I'm part of that team. And then suddenly when that team's broken up, you know, legally in this world, I think, well, which parent do I go to now? Like, do I never get to see mom in the eternities? Or, and I remember as a bishop, many people coming to me who have been divorced, just asking, so how's this going to work out? And I didn't have the answer. I don't know how these ceilings will be connected to that ceiling. And now everybody's getting married to somebody else. And so how do those ceilings impact the children? But these are important questions for people. And so it was difficult to answer those. So
Kurt, maybe just one thought. I've heard divorced individuals say they really don't like the song "Families Can Be Together Forever" because it creates just question marks in the minds of their children. And maybe I could just interject, is a topic that I've researched in regard to pro-marriage, but the issue of adoption and the issue of a child to parent ceilings, it is my view that it really just matters that we're sealed to somebody that's in this chain that goes back to Adam, and exactly who we're sealed to isn't always as important, because the primary togetherness will be husbands and wives, and everybody will have that chance before the final judgment. So we have that great hope that we will have that level of togetherness, but the togetherness of children and parents is less well defined, and we just don't need to worry about it.
So. Yeah, and I think as a youth leader teaching that doctrine for that day can make that emphasis that it's not that we as children have to be married to one parent or another, but it's that our goal is that someday we take another person to the temple and hopefully are sealed there and receive that ordinance. Right. And in this topic of topics in church, I know as a bishop on Mother's Day, I would just like really spend time with what are the topics going to be in sacrament? Because not only are there those that are single, but there are those that maybe have never been a mother. Right. And each one has different dynamics, or there's even mothers who are married, but just feel like they're failing at, at being a mom. So he never, I always would hesitate to have that person stand up and talk about their wonderful, perfect mother that did everything right. And then everybody's sitting there like, wow, well, if I could only be so lucky. So any thoughts on just topics, lessons, like even going to the families can be together forever, that hymn is so prominent in a lot of our meetings. And for one person, they feel one thing. For another, they may feel a completely different message or a different level of hope. Any thoughts there?
Maybe I'll just, if I could just go back to what we were talking about a minute ago and maybe the social stigma of being divorced. I just want to mention that for me, when I first got divorced, it was terribly embarrassing for me to have to tell people that I'd been divorced. In fact, it kind of felt like a swear word almost to say I'd been divorced, because my parents growing up, it never would have even entered my mind that they would get a divorce. And so for me, having to have gone through a divorce was really hard for me to have to mention to people. In fact, I would just kind of say, you know, my former spouse and I are not together anymore. But it was really hard for me to do and mention to people. And so I think that that's just something that people in the church need to recognize, a bishop and ecclesiastical leaders and auxiliary leaders need to know that it is kind of a hard thing to have to admit and say that you've gone through that. Because you really don't want to get into reasons necessarily of why that happened, nor do people really want to get into that either. And so you're kind of left with just that you're divorced. And it, at least it made me feel like maybe I was looked at a little less than maybe someone that happened. Now that might just be me, but that's kind of how I felt. And so that might be something for people to recognize or have someone not feel. And to carry on with that just a little bit, I think the most important thing that my bishop, I think, has done for me, and I think that he has realized that it's something that I needed, was he has brought me in a few times. And it was not something that I think it was something that he was just prompted to do. It wasn't something that I asked for. It was something that he was prompted to do. Almost every time he's brought me in, he has made me feel like this was not the situation that you're in right now, being divorced, was some circumstances beyond your control, and that you are just as worthy as anyone else. And that was really important for me to know that in terms of my healing.
Yes, I would imagine that leader's role many times is just reestablishing your knowledge of your value, of your self-worth, right? Because you go through so much, and it's hard for a leader to understand what you've gone through and how that, like you said, just mentioning to people that you're divorced, what sort of impact that has on you personally, that over time, I'm sure you that it wears on you, right? And so a leader can definitely reinstill that value of reminding you, you know, there's nothing that sets you apart as far as worthiness is concerned than any other.
Yeah, that was really important for me to know that and feel that.
As far as the doctrine on the family and, you know, when there's lessons or talks about family, I can't speak for everyone, but for me, I still believe in the family, and I always agreed with everything that, you know, was being taught or said. I read the family proclamation to my kids at least once a year, just so that they know, you know, maybe our family doesn't look exactly like we want it to, but this is, you know, hopefully what you will have one day. This is the roles that mothers and fathers should fulfill and how a family should be. And we're doing our best. You know, we're a non-traditional family, but we're making the most of it. And I believe in families, and I think they're wonderful. And I was very blessed to grow up in a traditional family with a mother and father that loved each other very much. And so I guess the hardest thing when it comes to singing those songs about families and hearing lessons and stuff is just to kind of teach my kids what hopefully they should have one day, even though our family isn't that traditional family.
Any other thoughts? Maybe Liz, what was your experience? And you've touched on this a little, as far as, you know, Brooks has talked a lot about those interactions with his bishop, where Brooks, you would agree that you've appreciated the bishop having those every 3 month appointments, right? You don't feel like, man, I'm fine. Like, just leave me alone. I mean, you feel like there's a genuine.
No, because I know he cares.
Yeah.
And sometimes it hasn't necessarily been in his office every time. He may have seen me outside. And so he kind of counts that and tries to take advantage of that and talk to him a little bit that way. Yeah.
Was there more consistency for right after your divorce with that for you, or?
Well, during my divorce, my bishop did meet with me very frequently as we kind of sorted things out and figured out what was going on. But I moved right away to another state. And so coming into a new ward, fortunately, it was actually a ward that I had grown up in. So I knew a lot of people. I was familiar with my bishop. And so that kind of helped the transition. We did not meet on a regular basis, but that is something I think that would have helped, especially during the, you know, right after the divorce. It would have, I think that is a good idea.
Would there have been like specific questions you would hope that they would ask you in those meetings, or would it mainly just be a good, I'm still thinking about you, everything going okay type thing? Or?
Both of those things. I did ask my bishop that question about stealing, what happens to my kids, and he kind of explained it in the same way Brian did, and that helped a lot. But yeah, just checking on us and just seeing what we needed and making sure that we felt comfortable and welcomed into the ward.
From a bishop's standpoint, I just remember feeling like, I've got to do something. I'm the last connection to the ward. And if I don't follow up, that maybe they'll feel lost or think that we've forgotten about them. But sometimes I could go overboard too. If they look at me and like, hey, I'm fine. Like, just, right. I'm good.
Yeah. I think, we need to be extended callings. I wasn't given a calling for 6, 7, 8 months after I moved in. And I was wondering, I didn't know why. I didn't know if, they thought I couldn't do it or, you know, I wanted that calling. I wanted to be busy. I wanted to be, an active participant in the ward. So I would say give single people a calling as soon as you can.
Great. That's very helpful. You know, the ward that I was a bishop in, we had a variety of apartment complexes. And so generally the leadership was younger because the older leadership or the older, you know, priesthood, the high priest, they were in the middle of a separation or they were, you know, in their in-between apartment figuring out life after their divorce. And so I had opportunity to interact with many of them. And I'm curious about as far as, you know, that the bishop or every individual hope that they show up one Sunday and say, hey, guess what? I'm seeing somebody or I'm engaged, right? Like, oh, great. Like, this is what you need, right? What are your thoughts? Maybe we'll go back over to the Hales here as far as, you know, what was the transition from being divorced to now I'm dating, quote unquote, right? Or is that a thing? Is there a transition that's needed there? Or what was that like?
Well, I made that transition many times to dating.
Oh, okay. Go back and forth, right?
I think that's the process as you date many people until you find someone that you want to spend your life with. Yeah, when you brought them to church, that was definitely a step, and everybody would look at you and say, okay, is she going to get married? But I think there's things that as a bishop you can delegate that can really help, especially single sisters with children and teenagers at home. If they don't have, both Liz and I, our husbands live out of state, so they don't have a father figure near who can help with carpooling and driving to young men's and those type of things. So anytime a young men leader or a young woman's leader can reach out and make sure that that child has either a special invitation to come to an activity or a ride or a friend is so important. That's what my children needed, was that support from their leaders. And even on the primary level, I think you can delegate to the primary presidencies and say, hey, this child has a little bit different situation, so you may want to consider that when you're making plans for your sharing time presentations as you're talking about eternal family. Say, you know, you still can have eternal family even if your parents happen to be divorced. That's not going to change your position before God. So you don't have to take the whole responsibility on yourself. I think that's a great thing to talk about in board counsel. What I would say not to do, though, is to make singles and their family a project. That's very obvious to that family. I'll tell you a little story. When we moved into our new board right after my initial divorce, the Maya maids had a project where they were preparing a dinner for a family in need. And my daughter was a Maya maid. And it wasn't until the end of the activity she realized that the family in need was us. And it was really embarrassing for us, for her. And for me, it was okay. I thought, well, there's hearts in the right place. But my daughters both actually came to me and said, would you please talk to the bishop and tell him not to make us a project? Because they wanted to feel like they were part of their social group and they weren't any different than the person sitting next to them in the chair. And they really weren't that different. Just one little dynamic was different.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, there's no doubt that that youth leader had every pure intention, right? But then it just sort of went vanity in there. So,
One thing that I would say regarding how a bishop might encourage singles in the ward regarding dating is I became single in 2001 and remarried in 2013. It was interesting because when I first was single, I did some online dating where you would meet people online and then later meet and go out on a regular date. And it was really had a kind of a stigma attached to it. You really, you're online, you're on the internet? That's scary and it's awful. I think by the time 2012 rolled around, though, it was becoming more acceptable. And if there are bishops who feel that's a negative thing, I would just offer the opinion, at least for me personally, it's a really positive thing because you can see a lot from their profile, but also there's a place there that says, do they have a temple recommend and things of this nature, which you can't always discern if you're being lined up or if you're meeting somebody somewhere. So for me, it was a positive thing, something that a bishop might feel inclined to encourage some single person in their ward to at least investigate.
Yeah, and in line with the online dating or just dating in general, should a bishop be concerned? I mean, I don't want to say interject themselves in that. They don't have a place there. But I would always worry because I saw so much hurt come from, you know, broken covenants from individuals who had been married before, who had been intimate before in their marriage and were familiar with intimacy. And now it was almost easier for that to accidentally happen as opposed to two teenage kids, right, that don't know what they're doing, right? And so I was generally found myself a lot more intense with them of saying, okay, like, where are you meeting? Sort of feeling like I needed to be that father figure in this process because I'd seen so many people heartbroken on so many levels on that dynamic. So should a bishop be checking up that way or any thoughts there? I know it seems, when I say it seems really extreme, but I was sincerely concerned as a bishop when they start moved into that dating phase from just being divorced or single, you know, and getting used to life that way. But any thoughts on there?
I don't think you're off base. I think it's good for singles to know that their bishop cares about them and cares about their worthiness. I haven't had any bishop ask me, you know, straight out, are you, you know, I guess they just assume if I had a problem, I would come to them. But yeah. I think, you know, any little extra help we can get just to know that somebody's thinking about us and concerned is a good thing.
Yeah. Okay.
My experience was, the first time my bishop brought me in right after the divorce, he said, I just want you to know that I know that you've been married. There might be temptations in that way that you've been married before, that someone that hasn't been married may not have. But I want you to know that you're just as responsible to keep the law of chastity as a 16 or 17-year-old boy that hasn't left on a mission yet and is just starting today. And then he handed me a pamphlet, and I can't remember the name of it, but it was sort of like pamphlet of the youth, that type of thing. And
the first strength of youth type pamphlet.
It was one similar to that. So we just want to let you know that you're still just as responsible as any other single individual in the church.
Yeah.
So,
do you get tired of the constant, "Oh, I know somebody you should meet" type thing? Did you have a lot of this? And you, how did you and Brian come across each other? Laura or Brian, you can answer whatever.
Well, we met online.
Oh, okay.
So that's why I'm an advocate of that.
So it worked for you too, right? I mean, work is so, not that anything's broken. I'm just, but for the goals that you had and finding a spouse, it led you to a good candidate.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing.
Okay, cool. Liz, are you being lined up every week with awkward older men?
I actually prefer setups because then I can ask the person a lot of questions ahead of time. And I feel like, you know, they probably know them pretty well. And, you know, depending on who it is, if I trust their judgment or not.
Right.
I preferred setups to online dating. I had a lot of good dates with setups, and I was always asking people if they knew anyone that was single that they thought might be a good match for me.
Yeah. Great. And I would guess that, you know, I sort of jokingly asked that question because I would guess that you never want a bishop to say or to feel like, all right, well, unfortunately this has happened. Now let's put our heads together and figure out how to get you married. Right. I mean, because almost as if we've got to fix this problem and find you a spouse, because I'm sure whether it's a stretch of time or indefinite, some singles just are okay with their status at the moment. Would you agree, Brooks? Or?
Yeah. One thing I would add to this is if you do get lined up, and I kind of do this a little bit more candidly now, is I try to ask them to put a little bit of thought into it. Not just, there's times I've been lined up where it has felt like, almost like a reflex reaction where they think, oh, Brooks is a single guy. I know a single girl. Let's line them up.
This is perfect.
And it'd be perfect. Just because you know two single people,
right,
doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to hit it off. And so I would just tell people to try to think about it, put a little thought into it. If you're going to line someone up, try to get to know a little bit about that person, maybe a little bit what they're like, and try to set them up that way, having put some thought into it.
And this is going to be an investment because you have to buy dinner. Liz just gets free dinner, so worst case scenario. Laura, did you have some thoughts there?
Yeah, Brooks mentioned earlier about feeling shame once he became divorced. And I think in this culture, the shame we feel is two-pronged. It's the inner shame we feel because we've been raised to get married at the temple and to work on that. And we try our hardest and do everything we're supposed to do. It will work out, and it hasn't worked out. The second prong is that from the culture where you just mentioned, I want to fix it. It's broken.
Yeah.
And I think it would be really helpful if we got to the point where we were saying, this is a woman. What can I do to help her in her situation now? Because that concept of something being broken,
right,
is not helpful to the psyche of either the single person or those interacting with them, or the children involved. They don't want to get this impression that somehow they're part of something that's broken.
Right.
Because the divorce situation is becoming more and more common in our church, even in Utah. But as you span out that radius, it's even more common. And in Africa, it's the norm to not have the nuclear family that is the goal. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of think need to get away of that thing, away from the thinking of we need to fix this. As soon as you have a companion, you're going to be all better again. Because even though it is wonderful to be remarried,
yeah,
there's a whole bunch of things that come along with that as well.
I bet.
That you need to work on.
Yes.
And so I could say, I guess I'm fixed now, but that doesn't mean I'm still not working on things and I don't need support from my community. That's a primary reason for many of us to continue going to church when things get difficult. It's because the community is so supportive and so helpful.
Yeah.
When Laura was talking, it just reminded me of something someone said to me in my ward. I went to a ward activity and someone said, "Where's your other half?" And I said, "Well, I'm single." And he said, "Oh, well, then you're just one whole person." And that made me feel really good and it kind of stuck with me. And so I think if you can help people that just feel like, okay, you're one whole person, it's a healthy mindset.
Yeah, a great analogy, you know, that, and really this fix-it attitude that it suddenly, like you mentioned, Lawrence, it kind of brings the shame to the surface, right? That if you're trying to fix me, when did I break type of feeling? And this can be related to transgressions, to many other areas of life that people feel like a trial they're facing. And is it the trial that's the problem, or am I the problem? And the bishop or leader can help differentiate that you have nothing to be ashamed of. You are not the problem. You are not broken. This is just where we're at. And so let's talk about it. And if there's a way that we can support, help be awesome. By the way, it is 4:50. You need to sneak out. You're fine. And we probably won't go too much longer.
We know how punctual she is because she's a personal trainer. So
oh, okay.
We work together and she's always on time. So.
Thank you, Liz.
Thanks,
Liz. I loved your comments. You were great.
Maybe I would just add on, since we were talking about, you know, dating and things like that, is that for members to be a little bit careful of how they interact. In terms of, like, they've had a couple comments. One person came up to me and said, "You know, you can start dating now," type of thing. Most of us are painfully aware that we're single and we're in these circumstances, and so. And then I had another person say something similar to that. You know, you don't want to wait too long.
And so, you're not getting any younger,
you're
right?
Not getting any younger, that type of thing. And so I think it's good to, if you know that person well, to try to talk to them and get to them a little bit that way and maybe ask some of those questions. But you have to be just a little bit careful on how you ask it, I think.
You know, I had an interesting set of experiences. When I was married the first time, my wife and I were called to be the ward single adult advisors. The couple that advises uh-huh. them and kind of keeps track. And within a year, we were called to be the stake singles advisors. And what I learned through the time that we served in this calling was that about every 2 or 3 years, the stake was trying to reformat the singles program because the program that we were then implementing really didn't seem to be working. We'd have activities where there'd be seriously hundreds invited and we'd have a dozen, maybe two. And it taught me that there probably isn't any one program that's going to meet the needs of even a majority of the singles in your ward. And so if we want to try to meet their needs, it's going to be home teaching. We're going to have to rely on the Spirit to guide, the individual leaders, but being worried that there's some magical program out there that's somehow going to get even a majority of the singles involved in any kind of meaningful way probably is unrealistic. And it's really going to be just the individual efforts of leaders and members that are going to help these singles, because the singles have so many individual needs that are so varied from person to person. In a marriage relationship, the spouse can help meet some of their needs. Of course, the marriage generates new needs, but the singles don't have that. And so we aren't going to be able to meet those with a program. It's going to have to be individual somehow, finding a way to do that.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. It seems like, I don't know where this comes from, but whenever members of the church face a problem, they either call another meeting, they create another program, or try and do someone else's job to hopefully fix it, right? And I think some people misunderstand the purpose of like a stake single program as, okay, this is, we're going to turn this into a marriage factory, right? And we're going to have these great activities and hopefully people will start pairing up and getting to know each other. And right. But sometimes those formal programs are mainly just making sure that we're not forgetting people, that we're able to fellowship them so that they can continue to have opportunities to develop their testimony. Right? So good for the thought, Laura.
Well, again, on what Brian was saying, I think as we are thinking of how we can help singles in our congregations, we need to be really careful about using the label single and thinking that it means anything substantive.
Because right. That's a good point.
There is so much diversity in the singles that come in our wards. You have the widows who are in their 70s and 80s. You have those who are never married. You have those who are single, but they have young children at home or teenagers. You have those who are widows. And if you gather them together, it's not necessarily true that they're going to have anything in common except for they don't have a spouse. And sometimes that's not particularly helpful. That makes that person feel like, I'm not where I belong. I was somewhere else before. I was just part of the congregation. And now I'm part of this small group of people I have nothing in common with. So I would just urge people who are trying to decide programs to consider, okay, am I designing something that's really going to appeal to all members who are invited to participate in this program?
Great. Awesome.
Another couple of things that ecclesiastical leaders, some may know and some may not, and in regards to dating and social life and things like that, is that, see, I'm 47. And by the age of 46, you cannot be in a singles ward. Okay, so it goes from 30, well, I'm not sure the younger ones, but the mid-singles goes from 31 to 46. And so if you're over 46, you're not supposed to be in a singles ward. Now, that does not mean you can't visit, because you can. Mm-hmm. But in order to have your records there and to have a calling, you need to be within that age group. Plus, if you've had children from a previous marriage, then you can't have your records there the way I understand it. And so, once again, I've been to a singles ward several times, but it has been just to visit. I don't have a calling there. And so, in order to maybe meet someone to potentially date, that type of thing, is not so easy, because you're not necessarily in a natural position in order to meet these people on a weekly basis. And so it's not always the easiest way to meet someone by a singles ward. And then as far as online dating, that's another way of doing it. And then line up dates. So all these things mixed together are some ways you can do it. And I have found myself getting dates from a little bit of all of that.
Yeah. So it's been helpful for you to just have different avenues that maybe you can try out. And singles wards have been an avenue you've tried, and maybe not that you're failing at anything.
Not failing, but it's just, it may not be as easy as, like, if a bishop thought, okay, Brooks, you're 47, go to a singles ward. Well, you'd have to understand that you're not necessarily going to be in a position that you're going to interact with people all the time, unless you were just to go sit down cold turkey to someone and try to get to know them that way.
Yeah.
And so there's some stipulations in terms of how you can get to know someone that way.
Good info.
And also, by the way, with firesides, I think Brian touched on that a little bit. I've been to several of them here in the community, and I would have thought, like in Syracuse, they have once a month. And I would have thought, wow, here in Davis County, surely it's going to be packed. And you go, and there might be 10 people.
Yeah.
And so, you know, one of the thoughts that's come to me is, don't worry about necessarily meeting someone there. If you do, great, but just go because you want to go and you want to learn.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the attitude that I've gone with.
Yeah. Not just this, with the pressure of, I've got to talk to three people in this room or,
But that might give a little perspective on ecclesiastical leaders in terms of knowing kind of what the singles are dealing with in terms of trying to make their life, their social life.
Yeah. Well, and I think in the purpose of, as I mentioned earlier, of this episode, I would hope that even, not that we've discovered anything earth shattering that the world has got to hear because nobody's talked about this subject before, but I would hope that maybe if a single, somebody that's single, as I'm putting labels, throwing labels around, but can maybe see this as an opportunity for a bishop to learn or be more aware of maybe some concerns they're experiencing, and they can listen, the leader can listen to this and just start that dialogue, right? Because like you said, it's not that your bishop has said the right thing or told you to do A, B, C, but it's just the fact that he has opened his office to you and just said, how are you doing? I can't imagine what you're going through, so how are you navigating all this?
Right.
And just starting that dialogue would be awesome.
I might mention one more thing.
Let's hear it, Bruce.
It's kind of a go back.
Yeah.
And that is how can bishops help? And by the way, my bishop is doing great. But I was thinking last night how bishops can help, or an ecclesiastical leader in general. Well, there's two ways. There's one directly and there's one indirectly. So directly, they can maybe set up an interview with you once every 3 months. And like I said, with my bishop, it was mainly just to make sure that I'm worthy and on the right track. And I think that he feels that if that's the case, then I will have the spirit to be able to help me in the other areas. And so that has been his main focus. But I thought indirectly, the way he can help is working through the auxiliaries to make sure they know the circumstances. For example, so I've got two kids and I have them every other weekend. So they're not with me every week at church. They're with me every other Sunday. And so in primary, like when they have to get up and read a scripture or say a prayer or whatever it might be that they're called to do, they need to know what weekends they're there in order to do that. And they also need to know that, like when they change classes, like at the first of the year, when they have a list of the names of the kids out on the front, they need to remember that just because the kids' records are not in that ward, doesn't mean that their name shouldn't be up there, because they need to feel part of that. And I've seen that with names have been missing before because of that reason. Mm. Not by any, it's not like they did that unintentional, but just to be aware of that. Then the other thing I thought about for a single father, I'm a home teacher, obviously. And so once a month, it would be great to have maybe someone offer, hey, I know you're a home teacher. Could I come and watch your kids for that half an hour and a half that you're gone home teaching? That would be a great service thing for someone to potentially do. And maybe so bishops could consider mentioning that to an auxiliary leader to try to help get that done. And one last thing.
Let's hear it.
So my former spouse obviously did the hair of my daughter.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And so when I initially moved out of the home, I was clueless.
And you got to get these girls ready for church.
Yeah, get them ready. I've got a boy and I've got a girl. So the boy was easy.
Right.
But my girl, I would shampoo her hair and try to comb it after, not realizing that I need to put some conditioning in there. So I would shampoo the hair and I would try to comb it after. And it was just like knot after knot. And she was complaining and wouldn't let me finish. And so, especially for the first month or two, her hair was a mess when we would go. And I really appreciated it when there would be maybe someone in primary, one of the adult leaders who had actually kind of done a ponytail or made it look kind of nice. It was really helpful for me.
I bet.
But then I kind of learned how to do things a little better. Still work in process, but just little things like that were helpful for others to kind of take over and say, hey, this is a single guy that doesn't really know how to do his daughter's hair.
Yeah, and I think that plays to one of the large takeaways that this is not just an individual circumstance. It's a family circumstance.
Yeah, right.
There may be children involved that, you know, it sounds, some of those problems sound trivial, but to get out the door and get to church and, yeah, and have your kids look decent, you know, that you're proud of, that those are important things. So
Maybe just one last thought.
Yeah.
It's easy when you're single to feel victimized either by your ex-spouse or by the fact that you've never married. Sometimes we can feel victimized by the church because of some of the things we've already talked about here. And so I think leaders can maybe encourage single members, and it's not an easy sell, but to recognize what great blessings we still have. Being single is a trial in our church, but even today, most people want to be married or have a companion. And so if they're single, they're going to be feeling a trial, but everybody has trials. And that can be pointed out in a kindly way that maybe if they can get past the victimhood, it leaves us open more to gratitude for the blessings that we all do have. Even when I was single, I tried to look at all the blessings that still continued, and I was blessed, and we all were blessed with the gospel and the hope of exaltation. And the promise is there that if we live worthily and keep our covenants, that we will all be able to partake of these blessings, even if now, you know, they can't even fathom how that could take place. It will. That's the promise.
Yeah, that is the promise.
And I'll just back up with, I would just like to add to what Brian said about that. I think that's a great point. None of us would have chosen the circumstances that brought us to divorce, I'm sure. I know that sometimes this has to happen, but none of us would have chosen to be in those circumstances. But because we are here, I think it's a great opportunity to learn some things that maybe not everyone has to go through. Like I said, it wasn't something that I chose, but because these are the circumstances that I'm in, like Elder Uko talked about in general conference maybe a year and a half ago, to be grateful in your circumstances. This is one of those things that circumstances that I can learn from, that not necessarily grateful that it happened, but that I am here. I am grateful to have this opportunity to learn some things that maybe not everyone goes through, and also be able to help other people that may have had to go through something like this in the future.
That concludes my interview with Liz, Brooks, Laura, and Brian. I sure appreciate them taking the time to gather together and put up with my questions. I hope I asked some good questions that help leaders. I'm interested to hear from bishops or Relief Society presidents out there that have their own questions that don't know what to ask. And let's get that out there. And maybe I miss some. And I always do. And I always do my best to prepare and put some questions together that are going to get to the core of the issue and really help us understand what's going on, regardless of what issue we're talking about. So please email me and send those questions to me as you think of them. But again, go out and check out Laura's book that's coming out. She's compiled, called A Reason for Faith. You can go to areasonforfaith.info. And while you're online, be sure to go check out leadinglds.com/help and discover various ways that you can assist in the mission of Leading LDS to get this out to as many people as possible. Now listen, the simplest way that you can help is just to send a link or an interview or an article to your bishop, your Elders Quorum president, Relief Society president, Stake Relief Society president, whomever it is, and just say, hey, you should check this out and see if it helps you in your calling. What a wonderful blessing that would be to help them know that there's resources out there, there's more information out there, interviews that can help them excel in their calling. So until next time, be a leader and not a calling.